listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and happy Monday, everyone. Happy belated, I guess it'll be, Easter for everybody. And also, I want to wish us over here on Get Yourself the Job a happy five-year anniversary. It's pretty hard to imagine that it was 5 years ago that we originally began this program. And last year, I was so grateful that my dear friend and mentor, Brandon Maslin, has been able to join us now. And so I'm so grateful that you're here with us to celebrate this momentous occasion of Get Yourself the Job. If this is your first time joining us, I am Jennifer K. Hill. I am one of the hosts here along with Brandon Maslin. And the essence of this show, in case you might not have tuned in the past, is a 365-degree view of everything that you may want to know about landing your dream job. We even kicked off this year with a special A to Z job hunting search series of episodes that we began in January, went through about mid-March on that. And now we've been talking to chief human resources officers and chief people officers. And in a moment, I'm going to introduce you to just an extraordinary human being, Paul Falcon, who we met many years ago and is just a thought leader when it comes to all things human resources. He's written many, many books on the topic. Before I do, though, I do want to thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search provides premier professional recruiting services. Ooh, got tongue-tied today, including temporary services, permanent services, and even payrolling services. So please do keep them in mind for all of your temporary and permanent needs. And as always on the show, you know, we invite you, please leave us any comments. We love to hear from you. If you're tuning in on the Facebook Live page on LA Talk Radio's Facebook Live, we love to hear from you during the show. So please feel free to put your comments below. So now I'm going to read to you a little bit about who Paul is. You know, I've known Paul for many years, but I can barely keep up with all of his accolades. So I'm going to read to you a little bit from his bio. Paul Falcon is a renowned expert on effective hiring, performance management, and leadership, especially in terms of helping companies build higher performing leadership teams. Paul currently serves as the Chief Human Resources Officer for the Motion Picture and Television Fund in Woodland Hills, California. He is the former head of HR for Nickelodeon and the former head of HR of international HR for Paramount Pictures. And he's held many senior roles, including in the healthcare, biotech, and financial services industries in Fortune 500, nonprofit, and union environments. Paul is a best-selling author for HarperCollins Leadership, the American Management Association, as well as SHRM as a long-term contributor to HR Magazine. He began his career in contingency search and also worked as an executive recruiter for a private equity firm, where he was responsible for recruiting C-level talent for newly acquired portfolio companies. His best-selling book on recruitment is titled 96 Great Interview Questions to Ask Before You Hire. Third edition was published in 2018. Thank you so much for being back here with us, Paul. It's been a long time, and it's such a pleasure to have you here with Brandon and I.
Oh, you too, Jennifer. Thank you. And hi, Brandon. I think I was one of the first ones 5 years ago, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you were. I think really, you're here.
Yeah. But you know what? Congratulations, 5 years. That's a wonderful anniversary. What an achievement. Good for you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's such a pleasure. I mean, I can hardly believe it feels like the time has just flown by and we've covered such a myriad of topics, you know, over the years. And it's sometimes you kind of wonder to yourself, how many different ways can you talk about job hunting? But quite frankly, with everything happening economically and COVID and in the world right now, I think it's a more uncharted territory than we've ever really seen before. So, Brandon, I don't know, do you want to start us off today, maybe with a question or two for Paul? I know you have a lot of wisdom when it comes to human resources and hiring with your background working with executive leadership teams around the world.
Yeah, thank you, Paul, because we're doing a series of HR leaders and human resource leaders or people leaders, depending. So thank you for being part of this really incredible series we're doing. I suppose one thing I think a lot about for great HR leaders is the methodology of which they approach things, you know, their unique approach to HR. So that's a very macro question, but how do you approach the profession? And is there any techniques you use as you've gotten more experienced and better that's sort of leveled you up in those you work with?
Interesting question, Brandon. Yeah. So the funny thing, you guys, I think if you would ask the people that I'd worked for at the various companies, you know, what was he best at? They would say he understood the business. Paul got it. And a lot of times they feel like there's a disconnect. And it's not just with HR. It could be with finance or IT or any of the other support functions. A lot of times they feel like, you know, you're a support role. Your job is to help us, but you don't necessarily understand our company. And so you need to make sure you're doing the fundamentals, but you also need to get to a point where you're asking a lot of questions. And so much of what I do is just listen, you know, set it up, structure it so that people like to talk. And the funny thing is when you're hearing different versions of the same story, it doesn't take long for you to kind of figure out what's going on. And then you do a little bit of the homework on the back end. But the most important thing you have to do is make sure people feel like they're being heard, especially in a CHRO level job, because a lot of times it's like, I hate to say it wrong, they see you as the enemy sometimes, right? They want to get something done, but they know they quote unquote have to get past HR. And I think if they feel like, well, you're cool and you get it, it makes it a little bit easier. And a little dose of humor here, and that doesn't hurt either. I try and make them laugh. But I think for me, that's always been my style. And making sure they feel heard and making sure that I understand the bigger picture. So that to me has been key.
Yeah, I know one thing that we had talked about offline, Paul, that I think could be valuable for people. And I know it's come up in a lot of the chat topics and comments that we've gotten from listeners, especially over the last several months, is how to set up your prior bosses as good references. I was just talking a friend off a cliff the other day. She was ready to walk out our job because she felt the typical underappreciated, unloved, you know, just ready to call it a day. And I was explaining to her, I was like, listen, you know, you could, and references are of paramount importance to being able to land your next job. And so what is your advice, Paul, in two scenarios? Scenario number one, great. You like your boss, you have a decent rapport. Scenario number two, you're kind of not a fan of your boss, but you still need that reference. What do you do?
Well, it's a great question, Jennifer. So here's the scoop, everybody. You have to make sure that you are doing what I call reference bridging. You have to bridge back to your former leaders, because they are going to be the ones who provide references on you. And if they haven't talked to you in 6 years, because you haven't worked there in 6 years, and a prospective employer calls them cold, they are not going to talk to them, because the policy says you're not allowed to do that, right? Unless you build that bridge, you call them back and you say, you know what, I'm lining up this interview and I'm really interested in this job with XYZ company. Would you mind sponsoring me? I know it's been 6 years and I'm sorry I kind of let it lapse, but I would really appreciate it if you would consider being there for me, because it's really important to them that, you know, they put a lot of value on references. So would you be okay to do that? Now, normally in that circumstance, 90% of the time employers will talk. They're going to help if they can. I know there's a policy monster in the closet that HR telling them don't do it, but they're going to do it if they can help. But you have to do that. And the value of that is when you call that old boss who you haven't talked to, ask them if they know of any openings or if they have any openings currently. It's part of your networking piece. So again, you don't need a million. It depends on how long you've been in business, but reasonably go back 10 years. An employer is going to say, well, how many places have you worked in the last 10 years? And the answer is going to be, you know, 3 or 4, 15. That's a joke. 3 or 4, right? And the employer is going to say, tell me who those supervisors were, because those are going to be the ones who would be the references. So you have to build that bridge. Only other thought on that I would say, Jennifer, which is really important to consider, everybody, is sometimes companies close. Sometimes people fall off the planet. Make sure, if you can, get your performance reviews from prior companies so that you can share them with prospective companies. You know, the recruiter has to do his or her due diligence. They'd rather check a reference, but if a reference isn't available, they will look at a performance review because it shows strengths, weaknesses, and areas for development. Not so much with a letter of recommendation. Letter of recommendation is only positive. They want to see something that's positive and negative. So those performance reviews can be golden if you really, you know, they need to do their due diligence. You need to give them something to justify hiring you.
All right, Paul, I'm not going to let you skate by. What do you do if you don't like your boss and maybe you don't have the best relationship? How do you handle that aspect?
I thought you really might be in a situation where you would forget that you asked me that one, because that was a tough one.
Okay, so that's why I'm putting it to you.
Yes, I know. Okay, so here's a scoop. Realistically, if you have a situation where you have a boss and it really didn't go well, and or you were terminated, okay, let's just put it out there, because that maybe is a worst case scenario. Rely on the performance reviews, because you probably, most people, it's like they've got 3 or 4 years and most of the performance reviews were good, but then it ended up on a verbal warning and a written warning and a final written warning and a termination, in the last 3 to 6 months of their employment there. Those prior performance reviews, though, probably are still good, positive. So those are things you can share with an employer. Sometimes, and I say this very respectfully, sometimes you have to kind of infer to your hire, your former manager or the company, you know, I know that you don't give references and that you only verify dates and title of employment, and that is what I expect. Because you don't want them shooting you in the foot every time, you know, the reference is coming forward. So remember, you're in control. You can give them the names of the people, but in that particular case, say, you know what, Paul, you're more than welcome to call Brandon Maslin, but I know he has a really strict policy of not giving references under any circumstances, but feel free to try him. But at the same time, I've got my performance reviews from when I work for Brandon, and I'm happy to share those with you. And that kind of gets the employer like thinking, all right, well, okay, well, maybe even if they do try, they know that Brandon's not going to say anything. And you may actually have to remind Brandon, Brandon, please don't say anything. I expect you to refer all calls to human resources. So,
quick question on that, Paul. So I'm actually just pivoting. My brain is like reeling right now, just trying to think of all the scenarios that some of our listeners might be in right now. Let's say hypothetically, and this is something I've recommended to people, and I would love to know your thoughts. Option A is do what you just said, you know, provide positive performance reviews or say that the company doesn't provide formal references. What about option B? Let's say you have your direct manager who you might not have had a good rapport with, but let's say that maybe somebody else on the same level or maybe somebody at a peer level, but somebody who was not your direct manager, what would you prefer as a chief human resources officer? Would you rather have me tell you I can't get a reference and here's my old reviews? Or would you rather have me tell you, hey, here's Susie Smith. She wasn't my direct boss, but she kind of peripherally oversaw my work. What would be the more desirable of the two?
Answer B. That was good. I should have thought of that, Jennifer. You were absolutely right. So if you, what you can do is say, you know, Brandon was my immediate supervisor, and I don't think he'll share any references with you because I've seen that situation before. However, you know, Jennifer, and I'd be happy to talk to her in advance and set up that call for you. She wasn't my direct supervisor, but she did indirectly oversee a lot of my work, and she can speak to my work quality, my communication style, and everything else. And you check that box. Good answer, Jennifer. You know, you're keep me on my toes. I like that.
I try. Brandon, what are your thoughts, my friend?
Yeah, you know, references are so important. And one of the things that I always, and as a recruiter, I found this. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, Jennifer, but I would call, I've had the experience of calling a reference, and it was a really bad reference, you know, that they either didn't like the person or they didn't think they did a great job. And I reflected on that less in what they said and more of a judgment of an individual who would put forth a reference that just wouldn't be glowing. So one thing that I think is so important is to vet these people. You know, all these policy issues that we're talking about are so important. I think most people break, this is, I'm a former lawyer, but I think most people break policy. I mean, I really do. I mean, if you're close to someone, whatever the corporate policy is, most people will say, off the record, they're fantastic. I'm happy to tell you everything, right? My point is that if you're putting someone forth, unless you don't read people well at all, you know, chances are they're going to give you a good reference and chances are they're willing to go rogue. I guess, Paul, that one of the things that's been coming up a lot for me today in my conversations with leaders is this idea of trust and the importance of, you know, putting forth a reference you trust or I suppose the reference feeling that safety that they can talk to anyone about you and there will be no repercussions. So repercussions, there's a word there that I'm getting wrong.
No, you got it.
I guess, Paul, in your experience of in HR, how important is it to establish trust with your colleagues or how important is it to create those kind of relationships so that if you ever do need a reference, you can trust they'll be good ones?
Brandon, it's the coin of the realm. I mean, honestly, when you think about it. Now, my argument is usually I'm trying to teach the management team how to build trust with their staff. This argument is a little bit different. We're looking at the paradigm a little bit differently. This is you, let's assume as an individual contributor, making sure that you've built the trust upwards with your leaders. But yeah, of course, it's part of the whole thing. It doesn't always go that way. Let's be honest. It's not always perfect. But I also think that there's no such thing as a perfect candidate. And there's no such thing as a perfect job. What you're looking for is a high probability hire. You're looking for something that there's no guarantees, but you know, all else being equal, this person is probably going to excel well in this company for a few reasons. They've got the right kind of background. They've got the right kind of stability. They've got the right kind of progression in the ranks. They know our industry. They've got good references. The more you pile on, the greater the chances that it's going to be a good hire. But everybody is a leader. It's not a matter of where you are in the right corporate totem pole and whether you're in management. And I think every leader truly has to make sure that trust is the coin of the realm. Because if you're not building those kinds of relationships with your peers and your managers, you have to rethink your career strategy. It is a lot harder to go it alone. It's all connected. We're all connected. And these references, you never know when they're going to come up. Now, granted, in my world, the way I've always trained recruiters is make sure you tell the candidates to build that bridge. Candidates shouldn't be going through this like a loose cannon on the deck of the ship, not knowing who's going to say anything, blah, blah, blah. The candidate's got to do the work. But the reality is the recruiter has to make sure that they're setting up the candidate so that the conversation can happen between the recruiter and the former supervisor. So the candidate has to have an active role in the process.
And going back to something you said at the top end of it, right? That was all the things that the candidate can do and what they should be doing. You mentioned something important at the front end I don't want to ignore, which is a lot of your work is in helping managers or leaders establish trust with the people they manage or lead. Can you talk to us about how you help people do that and what establishes trust with the people you lead and what ruins trust, if you will?
Oh, I certainly can. That is a great question, but it's very practical. And here's where a lot of people get it wrong. Managers sometimes, they think, well, I'm in management now, so now I have to act a certain way. And it's like, no, you don't. Just be comfortable in your own skin. That's the first message for managers, okay? You don't turn into something because you're now, quote unquote, a manager. But the reality is, a lot of times they get kind of lazy with this stuff. They're not doing it on purpose, but they're busy. You know, we're individual contributors, and then we roll up into management and leadership in that formal sense. But we never lose the individual contributor role. And a lot of times, they spend more time on their own stuff than they do taking care of their own people. And the paradigm shift has to be, what you need to understand is when you're an individual contributor, it's your work that shows your value. But once you move into management, it's the work of others that shows your value. So your comfort zone may be going back to what you do best, which is I want to actually physically do the work, but you have to break that habit. There's a book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And it's by Marshall Goldsmith. And it's a great book. And it comes through this idea of, you know, what got you here, this idea of performing on your own, is not going to be the skill set to take you forward. So how do you build that rapport with your people? It actually starts in the interview process. Building that kind of trust and asking them about career and professional development before they're even hired. And then it talks about setting them up for success when it comes to how do you motivate people. Well, you listen to them, easy enough, but you've got to create the space for people to motivate themselves. Everyone has a different need. And if you're not listening to them, if you're not setting quarterly meetings with them where you can sit and talk, you really need to do that. And then they say, I don't need to do that, Brandon, because I'm with them all day long. And it's like, that's a different conversation. When you meet with them quarterly, even if it's only for 30 minutes, talk about their career goals, their aspirations. What education do they want to do? Do they want to build a broader network? That's how you help people with their own professional development. Those are the best managers that I've seen. They make the space for it.
So, Paul, on that note, you just hit so many brilliant points. And I want to address this specifically to what's happening still right now in the world in many countries and cities, and depending on the state you live in. How do you develop that trust? You know, you gave the example of, oh, I see them every day. I was just on the phone with one of my old team members from the company I used to run. And she was saying, you know, it's definitely, there's always a different way of leading when you're leading remotely. Have you noticed that that's shifted? And are you training your leaders? And do you have any advice for anybody out there who might be a leader or a manager of really sustaining that level of rapport with people from a distance? How do we do that via Zoom? How do we do that via phone calls when you might not be face-to-face?
And Jennifer, it's a great question and it's very relevant today. And it's almost like when we talk about the right things to do in leadership, the idea of selfless leadership, the idea of allowing people the room to motivate themselves. Now you put it in a remote environment, you have to do all those right things on steroids. You really do. You have to do them 10 times better. You have to be that much more disciplined because it's harder. You know, face-to-face is easy. Screen-to-screen, not so much. And when they talk about mouse-to-mouse combat and all, you know, these little euphemisms, the reality, you guys, is when you're in a leadership role and you're responsible for managing people, it is going to be harder. Some people will feel isolated. Some people will feel lonely. They'll feel a disconnect. they're not at the mamaship anymore, right? And we've all gone through this. But what we're telling our managers is make sure you make that space. You need to be having a weekly meeting that everyone has a chance to talk. But you also need to spend one time a week with your direct reports. It may only be 15 minutes, but hear what they're going through. That makes all the difference. They need to feel that connection more so than ever, because we are isolated because of the remote workforce that COVID's caused. Yet on the other hand, there's a lot of positives that come through this. If you've got good management skills, you're going to have great management skills before you know it, because this teaches you how to motivate and develop at a distance. And that's not easier. It's much tougher to do that. But once you've got that tool added to your toolbox, geez, you could work remotely forever. And there are some positive things about working remotely, or at least in a hybrid relationship. It opens up all kinds of opportunities, but you've really got to hone your leadership skills that much stronger.
Boom. So, Paul, you come from an interesting world, right? You, the Viacom and the entertainment world. We've had a few entertainment folks on the podcast, whether it be Mike Miles, Chris Surratt, actually more in the trenches for our entertainment folks. We're going to have some other people come on that'll be at the, C-suite, if you will. What do you find is the unique challenges of entertainment that might not apply to other industries that are just unique to your world?
It's a good question, Brandon. So I've worked in healthcare, biotech, I've worked in financial services, and I've worked in entertainment. My initial reaction when people ask me what's the difference is there is none. People are people. It doesn't matter if they're making widgets, and it doesn't matter what they're doing. Okay. So that's the first cut. But the second cut is entertainment's just a little wilder. And what I mean is it's much more relationship driven. And I don't want to say an arrogance, but there's a sense of that doesn't apply to me, right? Because I'm rich and famous or whatever. So my experience was interesting. I had come from City of Hope, which is a cancer research hospital, which is governed by the Joint Commission and all these different kinds of government entities. We have handbooks, we have policy and procedure manuals. It was union. We had collective bargaining agreements, codes of conduct. And then I went to Paramount Pictures and I said, "Where's your handbook?" They said, "The what?" And I said, "Your handbook." And they said, "We don't have a handbook." I said, "You don't have a handbook? Where's your policy and procedure manual?" They said, "Why would we want that?" Now, this is back in the day. I don't know. They may have it nowadays. But there's a sense of if you have those things, they're going to restrict your ability to have the full amount of discretion that you want to retain as an employer. So we don't want those things because they're going to push us back. In a hospital, it's just the opposite. You have to have those things because every time you're surveyed and audited, it's the first thing they ask to look at. So again, very, very different approaches, Brandon. People still are people. And even though sometimes you're dealing with producers and directors or whatever, could be a little wonky, but dealing with doctors could be a little wonky too. It just all depends. But I would say my core issue here is people want to feel like you like them, and people want to feel like they can like you, and it's safe, and it's not easy. Mm. Because a lot of times, especially in entertainment, more so than in the other industries, they really do hold HR at arm's length. When you watch The Office and they make fun of the HR guy, Toby, so much, there's a reason for that. But the reality is if they can find a really strong ally, they'll be your best friend that you've ever had. And so some of my strongest relationships have always been in the entertainment industry, more so than in the other industries.
Well, and you mentioned an idea of getting along, and I love that one of your books is 101 Tough Conversations, right? And I would imagine one of the reasons, and tell me if I'm wrong here or if I'm right, doesn't matter, that people avoid tough conversations is that desire to be liked or get along, and that fear that individuals have that if they have a tough conversation or have conflict, that'll be the end of the relationship. And, at least in my work and my life, I find oftentimes it's the beginning of what can be a great relationship. But I'd love for you to talk about that since you're an expert on it and wrote a great book on it, that importance of having a tough conversation to facilitate deeper connection.
And by the way, you're right. I just want to go on record. You are right, Brandon. I'm just saying no. So here's the scoop. The idea, you guys, is the path of least resistance is avoidance, right? Nobody wants to confront. It's too uncomfortable and there's too much risk. So what do? You sweep it under the rug and you hope it fixes itself. And in the other 99% of the cases, guess what? It doesn't. And sometimes it does, but it's a little more rare. So you just have to pick your battles. But the reality is when it comes to constructive conflict in the workplace, there are just a few rules that you need to follow. There's not that many. One of them is, remember the thing we learned in the second grade? It's not what you say, but how you say it. And believe it or not, that is as important in when you're a CEO as when you are anything else, because there are tough messages you have to give in the business world, like in the personal world. But if you say it with love, literally, if you say it with genuine concern, even if you're terminating someone, you want them to be in a situation where they're feeling like, you know what, it really mattered. He was very nice about it. I didn't like that it happened, but he was very cool. And the second thing I'll tell real quick is use the term perception. Perception isn't right or wrong, it just is. It's kind of like, you know, they say feelings aren't right or wrong, they just are. You can hold someone accountable for the perception management they're giving off, or holding them accountable for their own perception management. The idea is they're saying, no, that's not what I intended. And the answer is, I respect that that's not what you intended, but in terms of a perception that you created, this is what it looked like from my vantage point. And it did come across that way. So it's not just your coworker complaining about it. I saw it too. And I really want you to kind of think on this, to reflect on it a little bit. Put yourself in that person's shoes. And the idea is, how do you raise awareness? That's what leadership development is about, right? The more aware they are, the better they'll be at being able to call difficult decisions, especially when the pressure is on. But a lot of people lack that. That being said, it is a muscle you can build. And whether you're talking about building leadership offense muscles or leadership defense muscles, you can get people, this is something, that's why there's so many books on it and topics and everything else. You can get better at this if you really change your sponsoring thought about who you are. If you really, truly want to get better at this, you can do it. Leadership is one of those areas that you can really excel in. And it's a lot of fun and it's very rewarding.
Yeah, you know, you just touched on something, Paul. I'm not sure. Have you ever heard of the HeartMath Institute at all? They do a lot of work out of Northern California.
What's the name of it, Jennifer?
HeartMath Institute.
HeartMath, no, I don't think I know them.
It was really neat. I was hosting an event with them recently, and I was talking to one of the people who was on this event that they were hosting, and she used to work at UC Berkeley in the Haas School of Business, and she actually went into Fortune 500 companies and corporations about sustainability and connecting. And one of their key tenets is that when we send, just like you said, Paul, I love that you said that when you send love, because you can actually shift just through breathing in a moment, because when we get activated, when we get angry or reactive, we're not going to say the right thing. We're not going to do the right thing. And we're probably going to create 40 plus hours of work for us, ourselves down the road. I don't know if you guys have ever had that before, but I can think back on many immature conversations that I had with people where I reacted in the moment instead of pausing and coming from a place that was loving. And it just makes me think of it, Paul, because recently in the last 2 weeks, I had a conversation with somebody that could have been very hostile and argumentative. The person was in an incoherent state. And instead, I just kind of listened for what was needed in the moment. I just kind of put my ego aside and I said, you know, what would really serve this situation well? And what I heard was that the person just wanted to feel loved. That was it. They wanted to feel loved and acknowledged. And think of how oftentimes when you have an upset team member or even an upset boss, it could be, I'm not saying it is, that maybe they're not feeling acknowledged, heard, understood. And when we pause and we don't take it personally, and then we give the person, we reflect back to the person what they need from a place of love, not fear, you can really create miracles across the board, personally or professionally.
I totally agree. And everything you're saying is about emotional awareness. And some people have a business maturity or an emotional awareness that's just natural for them. And other people, I think, have to grow it. So being an author and writing all these books, you know, I've got my own little euphemisms and everything else. But one, very simply, it's like what you want for yourself, give to another. And if you come from that, you know, people will say, Brandon, I don't feel like I'm respected enough. And, you know, I get it and I understand that. But the reality is where you've got to take them as the internal coach, because a lot of what you do in human resources is internal executive coaching, is trying to raise that awareness level about how are they coming across to others. And are you giving what you're hoping you're going to get from them? And it's not that hard, but people make it harder. So sometimes they put roadblocks in their way. And the funny thing about human resources, it is a little bit of a calling. I do have to say that. I mean, I was thinking about becoming a Jesuit priest earlier in my life and I didn't go down that road. But the funny thing is, there's a very strong spiritual element to being in HR in the sense of touching people's lives. And I think you can be that role model.
Sorry, Paul, I'm wondering then, so what called you to it?
Oh, by accident, Brandon. I had no idea. So here's my story.
I mean, Jesuit priest, HR, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Jesuit priest. So I'd gone through two Jesuit high schools, one in Manhattan, one in Los Angeles. It went to UCLA. Was before I chose, though, I had already gotten accepted to Georgetown. So I was going to go to Georgetown and become a Jesuit. But I thought, I'm too young. I'm not quite ready to do this yet. Went through my bachelor's and master's degrees at UCLA in literature. Didn't exactly open up all the doors I was hoping for. And I went to an employment agency one day and said, you guys, I need help. I don't know how to find a job. And they said, how would you like to work here? And I said, cool. What do you do? And I was 6 years at that company, and they ended up making me eventually their director of training. So from there, I then went in-house with a client company, and that's how I moved up the ranks of human resources. So it is so funny when I think about, you sit back and you say, knock on wood. I mean, I've worked for really good companies. I've had really good jobs. I've written 10 books on this stuff. I love it. I couldn't see myself doing anything else. Is it frustrating at times? Yes, you want to jump out the window. But for the most part, there is something that you really have to love about being there to help people, especially when they're down. You know, the recruiter, they come in, their shoes are shine, they're so excited, everyone's happy, right? The employee relations side is the other side. They're in your office and they're crying and they're frustrated. At the same time, you can help reinvent them. And even if it is, there have been situations where I've had to terminate people. They sent me flowers, and I'm not kidding. This has happened multiple times because they were like, I was really hurting. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible thing I get, but you were there for me and I felt it. And it's like, you know what? That's the mission to it. I mean, that's really the element to it where I say I'm in the right place because I can do that, especially when people need help.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Interesting that you said mission. Robin Aletto, who's a chief people officer at Fanatics, one of their principles there is missionary, not mercenary. So I just love that you have to be part of the greater mission. And I can hear where you align that you're calling to that in service of people, or, you know, a great priest, a great rabbi, a great, you know, imam, if you will. They all have the same principle, right? I mean, any religious leader is there to hopefully help people in whatever way they can. And so I see where you transitioned naturally into this role. It's organic. The other thing you mentioned that I think is so important is answering the call. And we so often ignore our calling or what is being asked of us. And I love that you ended on, we also ignore when, you know, I'm not going to use this analogy, but when we're not getting an answer on the other line and it's frustrating and no one's picking up, and yet we're staying in the job year after year after year, and someone comes along and, you know, mercifully says, that's it, you know, time's up. Right? This, no one's going to pick up here. And I think that that's a great line in Good to Great, which is keeping someone in the wrong jobs like stealing years of their life. Right. And that, you know, especially for people like you, I, and Jennifer, who are so servants-oriented, it's very hard to be responsible for someone's livelihood or the end of their. But I always hearken back to that pain I felt and I've seen other people in when they're in the wrong, when they're not in their calling. I love that you talked about that. Jennifer, I want to honor something that Paul's been talking about too, about the tough conversations. You might be, without beating yourself up, one of the toughest people I've ever met on yourself. You're very honest and aware of who you are. And I think one of the things that makes me realize is it's why people trust you so much. What's why I trust you so much is that, you know, there's nothing anyone's going to say about Jennifer that Jennifer hasn't been aware of herself. And it's never bad. It's just honest and raw and genuine. And one of the things I admire about you that Paul says that great leaders do.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Brandon. I so received that. And, you know, I wasn't always this way. If you had looked back, God forbid, you had come across me maybe 15, 20 years ago, as a different person. So I am proof that you can change for the better. I'm not saying I'm better. I'm just saying I'm evolving, constantly evolving. And, you know, I have to give credit where credit's due, Brandon. One of the attributes that helped me, or exercises that I would love to share with all of our listeners, one of my teachers many years ago, I also strongly believe in mentors, and we've done a lot of episodes on mentors, and that's one of the things that makes great leaders is being mentored and mentoring others in return. And one of my mentors taught me a tool that you can use, if you will, every night before you go to bed. So oftentimes we find out after the fact, right, that we don't even have consciousness or awareness that we pissed somebody off, we caused pain, we caused hurt. So one thing I do is I ask myself every night before I go to bed, did I cause pain to anybody inadvertently, something I wasn't aware of? Was I kind of a jerk to somebody? Did I do it knowingly? And then I just imagine, just like Paul said, just kind of sending them good vibes and just be like, oh gosh, I'm sorry if I was a jerk. And the first thing I do too is I also call the person the next day. This actually just happened with a business partner of mine. You know, she had needed something and she asked for something, wanted to do an extra call, and my schedule was just smashed. It was like I had literally 15 minutes in that day where I was not jam-packed. And so I took a call with her during those 15 minutes, and I got to be honest, I was not my highest and best self. And so I called her the next morning. The moment I was reflecting as I went to bed, I called her. I was like, I was a bit of a jerk yesterday. And she's like, let's kind of talk to you about it. you were a little short with me, but I understood where you were coming from. And so here's the tool. You can either, number one, ask yourself, did I cause pain to anybody today, maybe inadvertently or advertently? And if you can, repair it right away. Like Paul said, have those tough conversations. Don't wait weeks, months, years. Otherwise, it's going to have physiological effects, let alone emotional and psychological effects. And number two, is what I like to do is I like to write down three things before I go to bed that ties into this pain aspect. One is, where did I, maybe what do I wish I would have done differently? Like, how could I have lived today better? And it's not meant to be from a place of judgment. Like you said, Brandon, it's because I am aware constantly of the cost and impact. Am I adding value? Am I building? Am I destroying in every conversation? That's kind of the question I'm asking myself. And so I asked myself, hey, how could I have lived today better? Now, it might have been not having that fourth slice of chocolate cake or whatever it was, or it might have been more esoteric stuff, like, you know, was I rude or short-tempered or whatever it might have been. And then here's the part that some people even struggle more with, is to write down, what are you most proud of yourself for? What are the things you want to acknowledge yourself for? And it might even be the stuff that nobody's ever going to acknowledge you for. Your boss might not know you did it. Your business partner, your spouse, your family member, they might not even know that you went out of your way. And just write that down to yourself and say, you know, I'm really proud of myself. Maybe nobody will even know this, but at least I can acknowledge myself. And then a couple things we're grateful for. And that, you know, I just want to acknowledge my mentor who taught me that, because that's what allows me to constantly be in a process of reflection of, huh, okay, could I have handled that better? Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I can't picture you being anything less than perfect, to tell you the truth, Jennifer, but that's just the way I know you.
That's why I love you, Paul. That's why I keep you on speed dial.
That's right.
And
I think that's emotional intelligence too. The more aware you are of yourself, the more you can be aware of others. Right. I mean, Paul's journey. I love that you do HR, Paul, because I would imagine that journey you described, the journey to Georgetown, the UCLA, you must have done a lot of self-discovery along the way. Is that fair?
Yep, absolutely, yeah. Brandon. And you know, the funny thing too, you guys, is what I'm trying to teach when I do my lectures and webinars or the books or anything else, is like, you can be an emotionally intelligent interviewer. You know, so many times what managers do wrong is they jump right into the Q&A so quickly that the candidates are like jolted into, okay, you ask this and I'll give you that. It's like, slow down. The first 5 minutes, you need to really get to know the person. And I'm not saying you need to know personally about them, but from a career standpoint and what their interests are and what brings you here today and why are you considering, you know, possibly leaving your current company? And what are the criteria you're using in selecting your next company? Those are nice questions to enter into a relationship. Somewhere towards the end of that interview, you can say things like, okay, I have to ask you a question. From everything you know so far, and you've met all the people, and I know we're kind of in final rounds, why would this job make sense for you in terms of building your resume and building your LinkedIn profile? Like, why is this the next step in your career progression? Or another way to ask it is, if you were to take this job with us today, how could you explain it to a prospective employer 3 to 5 years from now? Why does this make sense for you? And I'll tell you what, you think about it. How many times have you been asked those kinds of selfless questions from an interviewer? And the answer is probably not too much. Because once you sit down, they start with rattling off all these questions, and it's like the relationship isn't ready for that yet. It's like, slow it down, build some trust. The whole professional development paradigm can start before you've even hired the person, and it doesn't even add any time to your interview. Just swap out some of those other questions. You don't have to ask them what their greatest strength and their greatest weaknesses. Those are old ones, right? But talk to them about what their needs are at this point. And you know what? When they realize there's that selfless leadership, they're like, whoa, I've never been interviewed like this by anyone before. And I'll tell you, that can be a real swing factor. So
I love that.
You know, two offers, right? Two offers, but I love, I interviewed with Brandon and he asked me all these questions about me and I've never experienced that before. Even though the other one is paying a little bit more money, I think I really want to work for him because you can pierce their heart in the process. And that's a sophisticated interview.
Boom. Yeah, I do a lot of work with an amazing CEO and now their entire executive leadership team. And I mentioned this last week, but every person on the team says they're there because the CEO and the first interview they had, they all were there after that. And it was because of unlike any interview they'd ever been a part of, right? But you know, I think that's the other thing, right? You're asking about these questions. The other thing you can't fake, you have to really be genuinely interested too.
Correct.
So it's that. Correct. But I love that. And I think that must be a really useful, it's a brilliant technique, Paul, because you can also throw someone off that's right practiced, you know, their game and get those more authentic, organic answers, right? And so I think that behooves the interviewer, I'd imagine.
Totally agree. Because it gets them past the Q&A. And you know when it's working, and it doesn't happen on every interview, but every once in a while they're like, Jennifer, you know, I normally don't say this in an interview, but.
Yeah, right.
As soon as they do that, you've got the real person. That's all. Yeah, right. You've made it safe for them to make themselves vulnerable. And I mean vulnerable in a healthy sense.
Yeah. Totally.
There's a trust that comes from the vulnerability. And that can happen as soon as the first interview, if the interviewer is looking at it the right way. So.
All right, Brilliant. Jennifer.
Guys, this is just, Paul, I could talk to you for hours. We're obviously going to have you back on for more shows. I forgot how much I miss you. It's been a while since we reconnected.
Likewise.
You know, sure. I just love your energy. I love your authenticity. And Brandon, I just love the vibe that you brought in and bringing in this conversation of trust, I think, that we've been tying in throughout all of today's interview in different ways and shapes, I think is such an integral part of landing a job, keeping a job, how you move forward from one job to another. There is this underlying thread of trust that kind of weaves throughout our jobs and our careers. So I think that's such an important point that we haven't really touched on before. So Paul, I want people to know where to find your book, and then Brandon and I'll give you one or two takeaways for our audience. So Paul, where can people find out? You know, I know you have 10 books. Where should they go to buy them?
Amazon, yay. Well, so Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of those, you guys. My website is probably the easiest way to catch all of these things. It's just paulfalconehr.com. So nothing too snazzy about it, but it says what it does and does what it says. But the books are available on, any of the, walk into your local Barnes & Noble and some of them would be there at any given time. What's really cool is I've written 10, but I'm doing a new 5-book set for HarperCollins. Wow. And it's really neat. So it's going to be called the Paul Falcone Workplace Leadership Series. And I said, wait, my name is the title? And they said, yes, it is. I said, I'm totally in. So that's great. So that'll be out probably the end of this year or early next year. And the first book in the 5 series is on workplace ethics. And I think ethics is a really, really important topic to be at today. So yeah, it should be fun. We'll see how it goes. Wish me luck.
And you have such a cool name, so I can totally get that, you know.
It is very Italian.
Paul Falcone is just, you sound like a spy novel character. I dig it. And setting the bar a little high. I'm trying to write one. You're on your way to 15.
Take your time, Brandon. It's okay. Once you get the first one out, the rest of them kind of come more naturally. The first one's the tough one.
I need the Paul Falcone branding, the super cool name. I got to change my name to something that's catchy. No, it's reflective of who you are. I think your personality is contagious. Your energy is as well, and you're you. I mean, what else were you gonna? You know, Paul Falcone, HR, I think says it all. And I hope people have listened to your unique style. I'm glad I began with that question because I do believe the best in the world in HR have their own unique style and approach. They don't do it formulaically or the way they read it in a book. They do it their way, and I think that's probably my guess is about. Knowing your books that well, you probably inspire people to use their own unique approach.
Correct.
Getting to know absolutely. You. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, beautiful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're awesome. Good. Thank you.
Lucky guess, Brandon, for not having read the books. You hit the nail right on the head. See that?
I know. I know. I've met the man, though, so I sense there the book. I'll read the books now.
Well, Brandon, do you want to leave? Maybe our listeners leave everybody out there with one or two takeaways. You're the takeaway guy.
Yeah, I mean, how do you follow Paul? You know, the bar's high. The lesson I think I'd like everyone to learn from Paul is find your way, find your unique strength, ask those different questions, say those different things, whether those are hard things or the good things. Lastly, ask yourself this question. If you're younger in your career and there's a calling for you and you're, for some reason, no matter how many times, you know, you're trying and no one's picking up, it's probably not what you're meant to do. There's something else out there. Don't ignore it. You're probably meant to do it. And I guess lastly, establish trust today. You know, deepen those connections, absolutely vulnerability, because you never know when you're going to need them as a reference. And I'll tell you right now, even though my best lawyer advice is people will violate their HR code. Sorry, Paul.
Totally agree with you.
You've established that trust, right? I mean, Paul, do you have any thoughts on that before we wrap?
No, just real quick. The funny thing is, I always, when I do my workshops, I always tell the managers in the workshops at the companies where I work, here's a scoop, you guys. You're not allowed to give references. You know that's the policy, right? And they say, sure. And I say, okay, I also want you to know I will not hire anybody into any position in this company if I can't check references. And they're like, wait, what? Like, it's not a perfect world, but the truth of the matter is I'm not naive. And I also know that they're going to give references to if it's people that they like. So, yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a policy, wink, wink. I don't want to get in trouble. I mean, you got to be careful with that.
Right.
But the reality is you kind of play both roles and have both hats when you're in human resources.
Authenticity. I like it. Jennifer, any closing thoughts, my friend?
You know, it's just such a pleasure and so much fun. I can't believe we've been doing this show for 5 years. I couldn't think of a better way to spend our 5-year anniversary than getting to just riff with the two of you. And I feel like so much wisdom poured through. Like, it's hard to even synthesize down to like the essence of what the show was. Although I think trust really does embody a lot of what it comes down to. In general, though, I feel like there were so many brilliant little pearls of wisdom that we'll all be able to go out and apply in our lives. I know I learned a lot today from Paul and from you, Brandon. And so thank you to you. Thank you for tuning in whenever and wherever you're tuning in. We're so grateful for all the feedback you leave us. You know, we're getting lots of emails on getyourselfthejob@gmail.com. If you have thoughts or questions, do feel free to find us there. Or you can also, we would love to hear from you on iTunes. You can rate us on iTunes, which we deeply appreciate. It helps us to grow our listenership and support more people. And also, please provide us with comments. Your comments are what helps to drive the show. We love checking out your comments. Today, we didn't have time to get to the comments as much during the live show, though we always go back later and try to address all of those as much as possible. And thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you to my magnificent co-host, Brandon Maslin, and to Paul Falco.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.